Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for this week's discussion of the defense, this time versus the Rams in week six. Ravens suffer another tough loss, but a little bit better defensive performance. And join me to talk about that is Brandon Croxton. Brandon, how you doing?
Hey, Ken. Always fun to join you. Disappointed that we couldn't get a win this week, but I think there's a little bit to be excited about the defensive performance the other day.
Definitely some significant changes made in terms of how the defense is schemed up and what they did. Changes not just from what they've done in the recent past, but even in the more distant past too. So we're going to get to some of that. Brandon, really appreciate you you joining us. For those who don't know, Brandon is a former MEAC, right? MEAC defensive tackle?
Yeah, MEAC. Yep, from Howard University.
From Howard University. Played with Marcus Douglas on his team when Marcus was a two-time defensive player of the year in the MEAC.
Yep, and he was an awesome player. Yep, and played with the Ravens for several years after that, so...
He's one of many players on that 2001 Ravens line I'll sometimes talk about as one of the deepest in NFL history. They probably had eight guys who had 10-year careers in the NFL playing on the defensive line that year, which you just don't see it happen. Kelly Gregg, who was getting his first significant playing time with the Ravens, his first playing time at all, really, with the Ravens that year, he was a situational pass rusher. Think about what Kelly Gregg became and how ridiculous that is. But Marcus Douglas was on that team. All right. All right, well, let's talk a little bit about the Ravens and the Rams. The Ravens lose again. They definitely had some improvement, I would say, on defense. Two major scheme changes in this game. The first one was to move to 100% big nickel in this game. They didn't play any standard nickel. I believe that may have been the first time the Ravens have ever done that before, meaning they've played some snaps with five defensive backs in a game, but never a single one without three safeties on the field. I don't believe the Ravens have ever done that before, and I can't easily check it. It'll take me some time to do it if I actually want to go back. But it would have had to happen during this Hamilton era, since the time the Ravens have been using him at slot corner.
Right. I mean, Hamilton is the linchpin for having a big nickel out there with three safeties out there on the majority, if not all, the snaps like they had the other day. But when you have a special player like Hamilton, you got to get them in kind of the best positions to make plays and help the defense as a whole. And him being up closer to the line is really the best way to kind of deploy him in this, especially now they got Gilman and Starks back there in the back end that can man the back end. He can get close to the line and be the game up there.
Yeah, he's the ace of trumps when he's close to the line of scrimmage. He's a good player still on the back end, but mm-hmm. nothing like him on the front end. It really changes the whole dangerousness of the Ravens defense. I am not actually 100% sure, because I intended to confirm this, but it certainly appeared it by his mannerisms and the way he had his back turned in a different direction from some of the other defenders. It appeared he had the green dot for this game, and he might have had it in the previous game at some point when Buchanan went out. But I think in this game, he was giving the defensive signals. Did you notice that?
Yeah, I could see him signaling. I'm not sure whether he actually had the green dot or not. Yeah.
Okay. All right. But it certainly looked like it to him. And the Ravens just don't have another player who can take away the strong side of the field. Nobody has another player who can take the strong side of the field away the way that Hamilton can, or bring that danger of, oh, he might rush the passer, he might drop to coverage, he might be there, you know, watching your quarterback for a delayed blitz or whatever it might be. He's a guy who really takes away the option of wide receiver screens to that side of the field. And that might have been some of the reason why the Ravens decided to make their second change, which was Wiggins being a traveling corner to go after Adams.
Right. Yeah. And that's something that's, they have not done in a while, is have a cornerback travel with a wide receiver. Usually they have, have each of their corners on that side and stay on that side and basically almost have the offense dictate how they want to match up, who they want to match up against. But this time, yeah, Wiggins is traveled all the way with Adams. And I think he started doing that last week with Nico Collins in the Texans. He was traveling with him a lot. I'm not 100% sure if it was 100% of the game, but he was traveling with him a lot. So maybe that's a good way to kind of deploy Wiggins, because he's been by far our best cover corner. And he's played really well this season. You know, when you're traveling against, you know, the other team's best wide receiver, you're going to give up plays here and there. But by and large, he's been a big asset to the team.
Yeah, I mean, I like magnifying his impact, even if it means you lose a few more times for Wiggins personally going against the number one receiver. It doesn't feel any better to just give up even more yardage, having it go against your number two cornerback. Right. But I think the reason they might have done it, and maybe try this on for size from, you know, your background in football and what, is that when you put Hamilton at nickel, you're effectively putting him on the strong side of the football field, where your slot receiver is generally also where your tight end is, and then a receiver outside that, obviously, when slot corner by definition is going to be an inside receiver he's covering. But Wiggins is typically going to be covering Adams, who's going to be the lone receiver on the other side. Not always, but more often than not. So it effectively gives you one strength on each side of the football field that you can kind of lean on. You try and have their best route runner covered by Wiggins, and you try and have the other games that they can play at wide receiver. They can handle the run game better on the strong side with Hamilton on that side.
And I mean, it's a good way to deploy. I mean, you trust Wiggins with his makeup speed to be able to kind of go one-on-one and not give as much, get as much help from the safety. And that way you can deploy more assets and help with your other corner, whether it's Marlon or Owuzie when he gets back, or Tampa when he's out there. They all need a lot more help the way they've been playing this year than Wiggins does. So you can kind of trust Wiggins to be on that island, and he's done a pretty good job so far.
Yeah, in against Adams, I honestly didn't feel like he had his best game. He only allowed, I think, two catches to Adams for 12 yards, and it was maybe on five targets or something. But Adams dropped some balls himself, and on other plays, Stafford overthrew him, and particularly in the back of the end zone on that first drive when they were threatening to score, didn't do it, and then doinked the right upright for the field goal attempt. Kind of was an ongoing theme in this game that the Ravens were helped out by a number of Rams mistakes in this game, which I thought there were many in number. There were at least three drops, and I think each one of them cost them a first down or close to it. Like one of them might have been on a third and 12, and it would have gained 11, and they would have had a fourth and one or thereabouts. They had two missed TDs throws by Stafford. They were actually on consecutive plays right around 2:30 of the first quarter. Then the big one, they were illegally downfield on a punt that negated the fumble by Wester, and then he turned it around with a big return. The next one, kind of like last week, the Keon Martin situation running out of bounds was a 25-yard exchange of field position.
Right, yeah. It's almost like the Rams were playing at 10 a.m. their time, because they, in that first half, they had not woken up, and the Ravens had lots of opportunities in that first half to get a lead, and they just couldn't capitalize. I mean, all the mistakes were going in the Ravens' favor. All of the calls were going in the Ravens' favor. Getting that punt, the fumble by Wester get called back on that odd penalty was, you know, a huge break. And yeah, it's unfortunate they just weren't able to capitalize and get that lead.
Yeah, there's a big deal. And, you know, the kind of the granddaddy of them all in a lot of ways, that the Rams led this game 17-3 in the fourth quarter. Now, if you have any complaints about Harbaugh, the game manager, and I don't know what that's where people's, you know, complaints really lie with Harbaugh right now, but I don't think he'd make this mistake. McVay went for it on fourth and three with 13:33 to go. I cannot imagine what sort of mathematician was advising him to do that. We have a chance to go up three scores with 13:33 to go, or potentially try to go up three big scores by going for it on fourth and three and making it. I'm not sure who advised him on that, but I really don't like that call.
I couldn't believe that he actually was going for it on there. I mean, it was such a no-brainer that you just kick the field goal, go up three scores, and that essentially ended the game. I mean, the way Cooper Rush was playing, it would have taken him eight quarters to score 17 points, let alone, yeah, you know, 20 points. So, I mean, it was just a no-brainer to just put that game away right then and there. And I really hope that could have bitten them in the butt with the Ravens comeback. And I mean, Huntley came in there and drove him down, but he couldn't get in the end zone. But yeah, that was just an incredibly odd decision by McVay there.
Truly, truly terrible decision. We usually think of the young coaches as being the more attuned to the math of the game, the more likely to be aggressive with those elements. Not in this case. This was just a terrible decision. I would love to hear the explanation, let's put it that way, and truly vet it with the person who thought that was a good idea. I also didn't see anything from like a Ben Baldwin bot on that. Did you notice anything like that? Because it's not on the general stream of Ben Baldwin bot stuff from this week.
I didn't notice it either. And I mean, yes, like I'm all for it. I love teams going for it more and going for it on fourth down more. Sometimes just go old school and just take the points. I mean, it's easy to just go up 17 and just win the game. I mean, your goal is still to win the game. And I don't know if you're going for stats or going for conversions or what you're trying to do there. It's put the game away. And
is it just, yeah. What's kind of interesting, the Ravens had allowed, I think that was the eighth consecutive. The one early in the game was the eighth consecutive. Might have even been the ninth, but they've allowed four and three, I think, the last 2 weeks, and they might have had allowed the previous one, the last one in week against the Lions.
Yes, it's really rough. Yeah, Lions were 3-3 on fourth down. Chiefs were 4-4, and the Texans were 1-1 on fourth.
Okay, so they've allowed eight in a row, then a ninth in the Rams game, which was a fourth and two for a 6-yard pass. So the 10th time they tried, apparently 10th time is the charm in this case, because Simpson and rushed in, missed the sack, and then Buchanan.
Simpson and Buchanan, yeah.
He forced the duck.
Right.
So yeah. As a great time to burn a coach on a fourth and three decision. It still shows you there's some seat of the pants coaching out there that just doesn't make a lot of sense. But I would love to, if somebody has got a reference to some model that says otherwise, please send it to me, DM it to me, or you can embarrass me, put it out in general Twitter if you want to, but DM it to me if you want me to look into it and review it. And maybe there was some reason why it made sense to do it, or there's a model that told them. It almost seems like it was an expected points model as opposed to an expected wins model. Not to lay it on too thick.
It made no sense to me either. I mean, 17. I mean, you go up three scores on that game, it's over. So that, especially, you know, even in the fourth quarter, even as early as it was, the game's over at that point. So just win the game.
I would agree. Brady in his prime wouldn't have probably brought New England back from that, but I'd at least have a little bit of fear in the case of Cooper Rush at quarterback or Tyler Huntley. No fear at all.
Right. Yeah.
All right. Let's move on a little bit. So, you know, one of the things that happened that was nice in this game was the Ravens finally won the snap count 75-51. So they won it decisively, I should say. And two of the 51 were just kneels, so they don't really count towards the total. There's a pretty important factor that kept this game close is that they won a snap count so decisively, because the Ravens went with only four active DL, which is, you know, my feelings on that, how many times I've complained about that. If you listen to the pod at all, so I'm not going to go on a soapbox again. Aeneas Peebles was inactive, and they also had only four outside linebackers active. Now they'd had five the previous week when Owe was still with the team, and Ajabo was still active despite that fact with Van Noy back. But what happened? They lost Tavius Robinson. And do you want to take a crack first at what, from your perspective, what does it mean to lose Tavius Robinson for this defense?
I mean, so what hurts is that this was their best run defense game of the season. They played really well against the run. They only gave up about 3.5 yards a carry. And they were putting themselves in good positions, which is, you know, part of the reason why the Rams weren't as successful offensively as the Texans and the Chiefs have been, because, I always get this from my coach that says, you know, the way to stop a team on third and fourth down is to be successful on first down. You know, Chiefs and Texans, they're getting 7-8 yards on first down to make the third downs a lot easier. The Rams were really bad on first down, which allowed them to have longer third downs and had a less conversion rate on that. And, you know, so losing Tavius Robinson, who's probably your best run defender outside linebacker, I mean, that's a huge loss. I mean, they really, I don't know who's out there as a free agent, or, you know, they're probably going to have to look to trade for somebody to replace, you know, just replace that run defense that he brings, and also the pass rush that, you know, he's, you know, at least a decent pass rusher. I mean, you're really scraping at the bottom of the barrel after Van Noy and Mike Green, because there's just not that many snaps out there to, you know, for, you know, to get some quality snaps on your pass rush. So it's a really big loss for these. At least he's not gone for the season, but it's a big loss for however long he's gone.
Yeah, I mean, if they're talking late November, it almost is like he's gone for the season. Or it might even be December. I think they said 4 to 8 or 6 to 8 weeks. So if they're talking 8 weeks, it's mid-December. You know, maybe he gets to play in those last couple of games on the road. But Robinson had 82 more snaps than Jones in the first five games, who is the second most front five snaps of any Raven. 82 more. So he's averaging 16 snaps more per game than anyone else. And he's also their versatile guy. He's the guy who could play inside or outside. They don't really have another such player. Owe would have been the second one, but he obviously he's gone now, so that's not an option. Ajabo is not that guy. Ajabo is not an interior guy. He's not a real physical player. And they're going to have to depend more and more on Mike Green and Van Noy for first down run defense. And they're going to have Ajabo out there some, just because they have to. They have to have him out there some of the time. But I don't know. I guess Malik Ham would be the next call up. What do you think?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, he's obviously the next guy. He's on the practice squad now. Yep. He's not active. He did the 53, so he's still on the practice squad. So I'm sure he's going to come up for some. But I mean, they need to get bodies also. Mm-hmm. Like you were saying, I mean, Ojabo hasn't shown that he's earned more snaps than he's been getting. I mean, so you really have a lot of snaps to make up for. I mean, you don't want Van Noy out there too much. I mean, he's getting older. He's already been hurt with that hamstring. You don't want him to get even more banged up and lose him for any stretch of time. So you really have to find a way to get some bodies in here, whether it's by trade or free agency, whoever's out there that can give you some quality snaps, because they don't have it right now.
Yeah, we're recording this on Monday night, and I guess, let's see. Right, Calais Campbell is now back in Arizona, not in Atlanta. Atlanta just took care of Buffalo, gave Buffalo their second straight loss. So that's nice to see. Even it probably won't mean a lot to the Ravens in terms of what happens down the line. But Calais Campbell might be a reasonable person for them to get back. He played, I guess, in Atlanta last year and is in Arizona this year.
Right. Yeah. I mean, We really got to hope that Arizona loses, these next few weeks, so that they're completely out of it and they can be sellers, because he's been playing well with them. I mean, he's got like 3 or 4 sacks already on the season. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I watched a little bit of a game, and he was still out there making plays, and he's still that disruptive force. And I mean, I understand why they let him go, but he's just one of these guys that just doesn't seem to age and is still a quality player out there. And yeah, it'd be nice to, because you're not giving up a lot of draft capital. I mean, you could probably get him for a 5th round pick, if even that, for half the season. So
I would think it'd be inexpensive. At some point this year, the Cardinals may say, oh, if you're at the end of the line here, we'll let you go and sign with the team so you can win. That's the common thing they did with Suggs in Kansas City, or actually, I guess it was the Cardinals who did it for Suggs, right? To release him and allow him to sign with the Chiefs. If there could be something like that, that'd be fantastic. If it's the last pick of the 5th round, I don't have any issue with it. I might not have an issue with it even if it's a higher pick than that, meaning earlier in the 5th round. You've got the right ballpark.
Yeah. Do you have to worry about it? Doesn't he have to go through waivers if he gets released, or is that after the trade deadline? Because the only worry with that is, a team ahead of him in the waiver priority could potentially pick him up. But
okay, so I'm not sure if the rules are the same during the season or at the end of camp. But at the end of camp, you don't go through the waiver process if you're a veteran, so you can't.
So when you're a veteran, it's at some point in the season. I don't know if it's before the trade deadline or after the trade deadline. Veterans do have to go through the waiver process. Huh. Yeah. And so you will see oftentimes, I can't remember who. The Ravens had, there was a safety that was released last season. And the Ravens put in a waiver claim for him, but I think he went to San Diego, the Chargers.
Yeah.
The Chargers were, yeah. I can't remember. Yeah. So there is a waiver process for veterans during the season. But yes, you are correct. Veterans, before the season, do not go through that.
Yeah, it's going to drive me nuts unless I figure out who that safety is. Marcus May.
Yes, Marcus May. Yeah.
So he was a guy that it had been talked about as a guy the Ravens would like for a while. The Ravens addressed their safety problems, of course, this week with the pickup of Alohi Gilman, which allowed some of the schematic change we've been talking about here. We've been talking about that on Friday Morning GM, probably in many of the different shows that I've done, which have looked at the secondary before the season began, talking about a camp who was really stepping up and looking like they might be a third safety for this team, and really talking about this team doesn't just need 3 safeties. They really might need 4 or even 5 who they can trust to play a little bit because of the desire to use Hamilton up front and then potentially also a dime. It seemed like still too much that you trade your best pass rusher to get such a player in Alohi Gilman. And I understand there's the cap savings involved are not insignificant. You pick up $7 million in cap savings. That's worth it, or that's worth something, but I can't bring myself to believe that Owe for half a season versus Gilman for half a season or for 12 games or whatever it was really at the time, really made that kind of sense for that kind of cap savings. And now it feels I have a lot more seller's remorse after the injury to Tavius Robinson.
Sure. I think the only question was that the last move? Like, we don't know any potential moves that are coming. And if they acquire 1 or 2 pass rushers, via trade or, somebody, in free agency, then I think that would make a lot more sense. But I think the trade-off was, it's worth getting Hamilton in the position to be a dominant player.
Right.
And early on in the season, he's not in that position to be the dominant player that he's capable of.
I guess
now that you have him there, you're essentially adding a dominant player on your defense by moving him up to closer to the line.
Wonder if there's a way they could have acquired a safety for a pick instead of trading away to get a safety and a pick.
Sure.
So yeah. Would Gilman have been acquirable for a fifth round pick?
Mm-hmm.
Or I guess, yeah, I don't have a real sense whether it'd be more or less than that, honestly, because he's obviously an offset to OA. So it's not clear exactly how that ought to fit and whether he's worth more or less than the pick they acquire.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anyway, the other thing is the team is kind of paper thin across the board now, and the next injury at any position. And we really, I think we're finding this out with the Robinson injury, but maybe also with Stanley's inability to play on the offensive side, it's just potentially devastating.
Yeah. I mean, you come into the season, I think you had quality depth across the board on certainly in your secondary. Defensive line and offensive line, I think you had some quality depth, and it's just really just been wiped away these last few weeks. I think the only, I haven't heard if Harbaugh said anything about the extent of Stanley's injury. It looked like it was his ankle again. So I don't know if they said if he's going to miss any time, or is this a pain tolerance thing? Because it wasn't an obvious injury when he left the field. But he walked out, and I saw him walking out because I was like, boy, that looked, the substitution that they made, I was like, boy, that's a big tight end.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. The new year doesn't have to mean a whole new you. Sometimes it's just about feeling a little less burdened. And one thing, for instance, I'm working on is letting go of that constant pressure to have everything figured out. Like, I need to be perfect, or I am behind if I'm not. Therapy can help you identify what's weighing you down or holding you back by giving you an unbiased perspective so you can better understand your relationships, your motivations, and your emotions. And BetterHelp makes it easy to get matched online with a qualified therapist. Their therapists are fully licensed in the U.S. and work according to a strict code of conduct. They also do initial matching work for you so you can focus on your goals. You'll fill out a short questionnaire. With their experience and strong matching process, they typically get it right the first time. And if you're not happy with your match, you can switch to a different therapist at any time from tailored recommendations. BetterHelp makes it easy to get matched online with qualified therapists. Sign up and get 10% at betterhelp.com. That's betterhelp.com.
Every day, companies you've never heard of are making millions off your personal data. Your name, address, phone number, even details about your family are pulled from public records on the internet, then sold without your consent. There's an entire marketplace built on your privacy, and most people have no idea it exists. Aura fights back. Aura removes your personal data from broker sites and keeps it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just a data broker removal system. It's a full digital security suite that protects every part of your online life. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager for safer logins, and spam call protection to shut down scammers. Aura scans the dark web for your most sensitive information and notifies you instantly if anything is exposed. And if your identity is ever stolen, you're backed by up to $5 billion in insurance and 24/7 U.S.-based fraud support. Other service charges about the same, but only cover one or two areas. Aura gives you everything: data broker removal, identity and credit monitoring, device protection, and fraud support, all in one simple app. Aura removes what's already exposed, protects what's not, and puts you back in control. Go to aura.com/remove for complete digital protection and peace of mind. That's aura.com/remove.
Carvana's so easy, just a click, and we've got ourselves a car. See?
So many cars. That's a clicktastic inventory.
And check out the financing options. Payments to fit our budget. I mean, that's
Clickonomics 101.
Delivery to our door?
Just a hop, skip, and a click away.
And bought.
No better feeling than when everything just clicks. Buy your car today on Carvana. Delivery fees may apply.
something like that, and realizing it was their left tackle, and watching Stanley walk off, and he just walked off and immediately grabbed his ankle on the bench. And so I hope maybe this is a pain tolerance thing and not, you know, anything structural with the ankle, so that maybe this 2 week rest can get him back to close to 100% health. But I mean, that's a really bad injury if he's not able to really go the rest of the season.
Let me I certainly hope he's back at some point this season. But Stanley, in his last two games, he played 21 snaps in this game. He played 15 snaps in his previous game. So it wasn't enough. Might have been 18. It was 15 snaps. So he played 36 snaps his last two games, which is 60% of a single ball game in terms of scored snaps. During those 36 snaps, he scored a total net of 4 points. And so that's 0.11 per play. You know, 11 on the 100-point scale here. He's been awful. So, and by the way, Note Boom was terrible too in this game. Not in the ballpark is bad, but he got an F for the game. I'll steal that from the offensive show for tomorrow and the offensive line article, but a lot more detail in there about how that went down. Stanley has looked brave as hell trying to play. I think they know that Vincent is probably not an answer there for this year, but you know, he might have to be active at some point.
Right. Yeah. You wonder if Stanley needs, you know, 3 or 4 weeks off to get that ankle 100%, it might be really worth it to give him that time instead of getting poor play from him and then have him just constantly re-injuring it or whatever's going on and leaving the game anyway. So if it maybe takes 4 weeks to get him completely healthy, maybe you give him that time. And I mean, you're going to struggle with No Boom or Vincent, or I mean, heck, even if they move Rosengarten over for, you know, a certain amount of time, you might just have to do what you have to do.
They don't have an answer. I saw that Harbaugh was asked about making offensive line changes at the bye week year. And he said, you know, hey, everything's under consideration. Basically, I'm paraphrasing this. Basically, everything's under consideration. The bye week is the time you have to do it, to make such changes. So it sounded like they might really be considering it. And all I can say is, looking at the offensive scoring week after week, are you really going to get rid of all five offensive linemen? Because those are the guys who deserve to be replaced right now. And maybe you could maybe make a claim that Rosengarten doesn't, or because he's played three of the last four games well, that maybe Voorhees doesn't, or that he's been okay and not absolutely terrible, that Falele doesn't, because he's probably, you know, about a C- for the year right now. It might even be a low C. I mean, that's really where he's been so far. But Linderbaum's having the worst year of his career. He's having a worse year than his rookie year in terms of his pass blocking. He's even worse. I throw my arms up in terms of what's going on. I got penalized twice more in this game as well, including a holding penalty that kind of got washed out by a sack, but it still was another, you know, flag on his record as well. An absurd set of circumstances when all your good players, all your players you're really hoping on, are not really playing particularly well. Rosengarten's in the group too, by the way. He allowed two late sacks in this one. Didn't end up with a good score. So, yeah, there's just right now, I mean, you could talk about making replacements on the line, but I wouldn't even know where to start on this offensive line in terms of who needs to be replaced.
Yeah. I mean, nobody's been particularly good. It's just, you know, Falele hasn't been terrible, but he hasn't been good. Nobody's been good on the offensive line. That's right. I think that's a frustrating thing. It's, you know, like you mentioned, Falele was really good in the second half of last year. Rosengarten showed promise. You know, Stanley was a borderline Pro Bowler last year. So, I mean, those are three guys that have all really kind of regressed a bit this season. I mean,
Linderbaum,
what are your
too,
thoughts about it's
big regression?
Yeah. And I mean, what are your thoughts about Emory Jones? Like, I think you give up that essential red shirt year that you had for him. Is it possible that he's going to get some play? You would throw him in, you know, either a guard or maybe potentially right tackle and move Rosengarten over if Stanley's injured? Or what are your thoughts?
It kind of depends on where the season goes. I mean, if the season's in the toilet, then I think you want to see who Bullock is, to see if he can replace Linderbaum next year, because you've got a big contractual decision to make. So you want him to get some time in there, and probably at center, by the way. See how much runway the guy needs, see if he could be a viable center as early as next year. And I think that's one possibility. If he isn't, you probably want to make him your backup center again for 2026 and draft a center in the second or third round. Or you want to sign Linderbaum if they can come to an agreement that makes sense financially, because right now making Creed Humphrey money does not make sense at all. So they're going to have to find that dollar amount that makes sense between the team and Linderbaum. That's a very tough decision there. And then in terms of your other players, I think you want to see everything you have. Cleveland is the one guy that it doesn't matter who he is, because he'll either be here around on a 1-year contract next year, or he won't be, but the Ravens don't own his future in any way, shape, or form. So they don't really, if they knew who he is in from practice, that's probably good enough for me in terms of either keep him around at a vetmin deal or you let him walk. And then the other guys, would I like to see Vincent for a little bit of time? I probably would. I'd probably like to know for purposes of, can I let Noteboom go? Or I might have to let Noteboom go anyway, because I don't think he's played particularly well this year. Those are both positive. So I think all of that on the offensive line is true, and all that on several defensive positions is true, particularly an inside linebacker for them to figure out what they have. But also, a player like Okoye, maybe there's a chance he can help you in the future. If there is, let's figure it out this year, so we don't have to have him be a complete hope player and an unknown in 2026, instead of a guy we're kind of depending on even for a fourth or fifth DL role.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, I think from what he showed on Sunday, he showed a little promise of being at least a decent run stuffer. The middle of that line between him and Jenkins really played well and played discipline and got off blocks and was able to kind of disrupt the running game. So
yeah,
I was encouraged by Okoye. Yeah.
I thought Urban did a pretty good job too on the inside. Yeah. Had one play where he really stuffed the play, then made the tackle. Normally Urban is a great space controller. That's not Okoye's specialty. I don't think of Okoye as being that guy, but they've moved Okoye off to play a fair amount of three with Jenkins at the nose, which, as you know from your defensive line experience, gives him a lot of one-on-one opportunities where the other team either has to commit their offensive tackle to a down block on him, or face a one-on-one matchup, which is probably not going to go that player's way.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And yeah, he's been able to take advantage, and he was a good force on the D-line on Sunday. So hopefully that continues. That is a massive man right there. Yeah. He should not be moved easily.
That is one of the scheme changes they'd had, and they really gave up on having a three tech penetrator by setting Aeneas down, because there's nobody else on the team who bears that any resemblance to that role. Currently, with the Urban and three nose tackles being active on the defensive line, what they really are telling the other team is they're going to go big against your right guard, typically, on some passing downs, and that's a strategy, and it's a shift to something they think has a better chance to work than Jones at nose and somebody else at three tech who they don't know if they really can trust to penetrate, even if Jones gives them the one on one.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think we've been seeing Jones at the three tech a fair amount more these last few games. And hopefully we'll see him and hopefully he can get a little pass rush juice up the middle. Yeah.
Yeah. I would expect he would, but I'm not sure where he is in terms of the injury, but I certainly hope he gets better. Let's move on to some other more general things. The secondary dressed 10 men in this game, which is it's a lot, considering the number of total activations you have for defense might be 22 or 23. And then they only had four defensive linemen. They only had four outside linebackers. And I guess they had four inside linebackers as well, right? Because there's no everybody except for Roquan dressed. So they would have had 22 on defense, including 10. So the last choice would have been down to Peebles or one additional defensive lineman. This is pretty much a special teams move.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is not anybody's favorite. Yeah.
Were you at all surprised about Alexander being, you know, distinctly lower on the totem pole than Tampa? And one thing I noticed at the game was Alexander led the Ravens out of the tunnel. He was
he looked like he was ready for the game. Him and Andrews were sprinting to the end zone at when they got introduced, and I thought we were going to see him, and he didn't play at all. And I mean, like, I think it's a terrible sign for him and his career that, I mean, TJ Tampa's can only get in there for, you know, 4 or 5 snaps himself, and he's behind the totem pole, but behind Tampa. And like, I think cornerback has become very crowded now that you have Hamilton taking all of the snaps at slot corner. So now you really only have 2 corners out there. Wiggins, you know, needs to be out there every down. So if you're going to do any kind of rotation, it's going to be between Humphrey and Awuzie or Alexander and Tampa, and, you know, him not being able to get on the field at all is disappointing. Yeah. It's disappointing big time.
It wouldn't be too hard to imagine if Awuzie returned at this point that Awuzie would be active and Alexander would be inactive. Because I don't think they need Alexander for any kind of backup slot purposes. You know, they have Humphrey to be the backup slot if something were to happen to Hamilton. And they also have Martin, who I just think they probably think is more of a fit under certain conditions in the slot. Like, both Humphrey and Hamilton are physical players. Having a player like Keon Martin, this year, having a fairly fast player.
Right. Yeah. Do you think, I mean, at some point in the season, do you think Alexander gets released?
It could happen.
Yeah. The roster crunch. No playing time. Yeah.
I don't think they want to do it, and I don't think they'll probably do it until after the trade deadline, but I think it's possible. And if I think back to 2008 in Harbaugh's first season as coach, one of the things he inherited was the right to bench Chris McAllister. And Chris hadn't played very well. In 2006, he had 15 penalties. In 2007, he, like a lot of the Ravens secondary, had been hurt, but not for the whole year or anything. 2008, he seemed to be playing okay early in the season. I wouldn't say great, but he seemed to be playing okay early in the season. And all of a sudden, you know, Harbaugh benched him. I think it was in that game at Miami where they finally got it turned around. Do you remember that they went down to Miami, beat him 27-13. They were 2-3 going into that game. And then they started to really hit their stride at that point. They benched him for that game. And, he said all the right things. Harbaugh did. He said, you know, he's going to play well again for us and in this league, you know, kind of thing. And then it wasn't very long before they got rid of him. I forget if they just didn't keep his contract at the end of the year, or they traded him to the Saints that year before the deadline. I don't remember which.
Yeah, I almost want to say they released him during the season at some point, because he got benched. And then I think something else happened, because it happened like around the Chargers game that year.
Is this something he did stupid? That was actually in 2003, if we're talking about that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I've asked. Okay, I'll tell this story, even though I run the risk of this being told within the Ravens and Harbaugh getting angry at me about it for it, which is probably wouldn't be true anyway. But we were at a Sweetholders event. It's called State of the Ravens, they would hold. And I don't own a suite, obviously, but my company had tickets in a suite, and we had 4 tickets, I think, to the event. And I went and I asked him, you know, what was it about his play that made you bench the guy? Is it something more than we can see that was on the field? And I'm paraphrasing my own question. He said, look, I told you, he could see I was writing something down. And he said, I didn't think you guys were going to be here. So I think he must have thought I was media or something, which I definitely was not at the time. But I was writing something down because I wanted to write something for a web post. And And he, you know, he finished his answer, but he's obviously upset with me about it. I said, follow up for Ozzy. Why did he miss the game at San Diego in 2003? And Ozzy thought about it for a second because it had been 5 years. And they said, no, I can't tell you that. he violated team rules, but I can't tell you any more than that. And I realize I'm not answering your question. One of the things they try to do at that event was make sure they answer your question fully. There's a big premium afforded to that. And most of the time, it's not a problem because most of the, frankly, the people who are there, they want to ask a CEO question where they're just trying to look smart. So they'll go ramble on for a minute and a half with their question rather than just ask him what the information is they really want to know. And that was, anyway, funny event at that moment as it occurred. So we had a rap sheet long before John got there. So.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's go through some other stuff because we've got to cover some ground here. Rams had just 15 first downs in the game, which was nice. They converted 5 of 10 on third and fourth down. It's 4 of 10 on third down, but only 1 of 2 on fourth down, which was nice. Of course, that included that ridiculous attempt in that fourth quarter. You mentioned they held the Rams rushing game down. The Rams have a pretty effective run game with Kyron Williams and with Corum, and yet they averaged only 3.6 yards per carry in this game when you take out the kneels.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So very, very, I think that is one thing that I'm very encouraged about because the Rams have always had a very good run game under McVay, and they've had success against us with their run game, and for them to really kind of shut that down and them not be effective at all. I think their longest run was a 12-yard run by Corum. So like they had very little success the entire day running the ball. And I mean, that if you're able to stop the run and just stop that bleeding a little bit, it's going to help your entire defense because it's going to make those third downs longer. It's going to force them in more obvious pass situations, and then you can kind of go from there. So yeah,
it'd be nice for them to do more of that. You know, I'm thinking about the how they address the outside linebacker issues, but maybe there is one more solution, and that is don't try and find another outside linebacker. So you don't have to go get Ham or Rucker off the practice squad. Rucker actually has a pass rush background from North Carolina. He potentially could give the Ravens something there, which they desperately need. So I'm not saying this other solution I have in mind is the best thing, but if they moved Urban to effectively play an outside linebacker role, because he's a five tech and the five tech position is dying anyway, if you move him to play essentially an uncovered end on that side, I wonder if that could work. I don't think the idea of moving Simpson there on a rundown makes any sense at all. He's just too small for that particular role. He could provide something in passing situations there. But what do you think about Urban taking over some first down run stuffing role, say the way Malik Harrison did?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something you definitely have to look at, and you probably need to do, especially on first downs. The downside with that is he's not going to give you a lot of pass rushing ability on the outside. So you're going to lack in that. But, I mean, having him and, you know, two of the big guys in the middle, I think that's a really nice, solid front for obvious run situations that, yeah, I think they could be more effective there.
Right. It definitely is a trade-off of chips there. I want to talk packages just for a minute because the Ravens did some things that were new in this game. They played, okay, I'm going to go through all the packages because they only played 5 in this game. They played 2 jumbo packages where they put in a 4th defensive lineman. So they had 3 nose tackles effectively out there plus Urban. That's 4 very big men. And they gave up consecutive 6-yard runs, which is incredibly disappointing for that to happen on such plays. It was on their final real drive to start it off. Then they played 6 snaps of base. The base was very effective. Only allowed 4 total yards on 6 rushes. So they're all rushes. They didn't pass at all against base defense. But unfortunately, one of them, they were first and goal from the 3, and they ran it for 3 yards. And the other 5, they ran for 1, which was quite enough for it to be effective, I guess. They're running versus the Ravens' base.
Sure. Yeah.
All right, big nickel, 38 snaps, no snaps of regular nickel, so this made up most of what they did. 38 plays, 192 yards, 5.1 yards per play, 2 sacks and 1 turnover. I thought they used Hamilton very effectively and in a variety of ways. They had him rush the passer and got pressure a couple times. He didn't miss any tackles that I noted in the game. And it did not really make an imprint on coverage, but sometimes it's when you're not thrown at that you make an imprint on coverage.
Right, exactly. Yeah. It looked like he was doing well covering whoever it was in the slot. Sometimes it was Puka, sometimes it was somebody else, but yeah, he did well in coverage, and they use him like they should be using Hamilton, blitzing him, letting him play the run, you know, play the outside contain on the run sometimes. And like that's exactly what you want out of Hamilton.
They played the one rush nickel snap. That was also a big nickel, by the way. And that was just with all that means is that Tavius Robinson moved inside to replace a defensive lineman. So they're not going to be playing that for a while, obviously. Not sure where they go from there. No standard nickel the whole entire game. No jumbo nickel, which is playing three down linemen with only one inside linebacker. So they didn't try that. They basically were committed to the two inside linebackers, Simpson and Buchanan, every play that they didn't go to a dime package, which was only a couple plays in there anyway. They also had. Yeah, I'm trying to think of what else they played that would have had not a second inside linebacker, because the base did, the big nickel did, the rush nickel did. The dime did not. It might just be those two dime snaps, but something tells me maybe a jumbo snap. They didn't have a second inside linebacker on one of those. Mm-hmm. All right, then they played two dime snaps, which weren't effective. They gave up 35 yards on those, 17 and a half yards per play. There, Hamilton's playing more of a weak side linebacker role, so he's playing more as a underneath zone defender. Not a lot to draw on that from two results there, but it was what it was. What else is there, anything else about the way the Ravens played, you know, schematically, or anything they did that Orr would have called the game that was different than what you expected?
I thought when they traded for Gilman, I thought that was a clear indication that they'd be running a lot more big nickel with Hamilton at the slot. So it was good to see. It's good to see Hamilton affecting the defense more, making, you know, being a more of a factor than he is on the back end. I mean, especially, you know, when you have so many injuries and you're losing so many of your playmakers, like him, you really need him to be that leader and be that dynamic playmaker that this team just lacks right now. So it was good to see. I mean, I thought they played a good game on defense. I mean, they got the one turnover. I wish they could have, I still wish they could get more pressure on the quarterback than they're getting. But especially while only rushing four, we'll see what happens with that. But I thought they played a real good game against a very good offense. I mean, Stafford gives us trouble most of the time when we play him. I mean, McVay's a great offensive mind. They have a good running game. This is a really good team, and they played a good game on defense.
Yeah, I thought so too. I did. You know, I think you got to kind of take some contextual stuff out of it in terms of what the Rams did to shoot themselves in the foot. But regardless, I'd say it was a good game played by the Ravens, and it was the kind of game they needed to play. They needed to have a kind of a reaffirming game defensively that would give them some hope for when Lamar Jackson comes back, and they also needed to do some things better, particularly in terms of snap count on both sides of the ball, to turn that around too. And they did that in spades in this game, I thought.
Yeah. I mean, it was important and good to see that they were able to run the ball pretty effectively with Henry. I mean, that, like, I think their first two drives took up like pretty much an entire quarter. I mean, their first drive took up almost 9 minutes, And I think their second drive took up a pretty significant amount of time as well. So, I mean, the Rams didn't have an opportunity in that first half to score and, you know, possess the ball much, because they just weren't given the many opportunities. And they, you know, so the Ravens were able to take advantage. And yeah, you mentioned earlier about the big snap count differential, and that's huge for a defense as well.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Brandon, always great talking football with you. Tell folks, where can they talk football online if they would like to, or reach out to you otherwise to ask you a question?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at bcroxton99. Love talking football. Raven season ticket holder. So, yeah, love football.
All right. Other folks out there, thanks for listening as always. We appreciate the loyalty of this audience. Use hashtag Film Study Mailbag for any questions you might have. If you'd like to see a different type of show, even if it's not a short you want to do personally, which, hey, this is the bye week. If you have short ideas, love to talk to you about them. But if you'd like to see a different type of show, maybe it'd be a regular rotational element. It could be done once a week. It could be done once a quarter during the season, but I'm open to new ideas there to try and keep the content as fresh as possible. I think we've got some good shows with Know Your Foe, with the Friday Morning GM, and we appreciate it. I realize from the listens that you guys must really like that. But I'm wondering if some other type of content is needed, and whether or not you guys have some idea of what that might be. Thanks for listening, Brandon. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s. It works for members like...
I'm Haley, and I've lost 100 pounds. Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects. It's all in one place.
Weight Watchers handles the insurance for you and offers affordable cash pay options. With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
I'm Mike, and I've lost 135 pounds. Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
I'm Sharia, and I lost 80 pounds on Weight Watchers. I realized that it would take more than a prescription to lose weight and feel good on a GLP-1.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last.
I can't imagine doing a GLP-1 without Weight Watchers.
Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com/GLP-1. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now, it's your turn. Weight Watchers. Watch it work.